Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat, part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Torres. I'll be your host today. Joined today by my co-hosts, Mike Carter and Dave Funnel. We're going to have a nice and tidy All-Star Week episode. Not much happening around the world of baseball these past few days, but we're still going to do our best to provide you with some actionable fantasy-related information as you gear up for the second half of the baseball season. We're going to have Mike break down some bullpens today and tell us about some bullpens that may be in flux and may be changing as a result of the upcoming trade deadline. We've also got Dave, who will be doing a segment on injuries, and he'll be identifying some injured players he thinks you should and should not be stashing for the second half. And next segment after that will be a second half draft amongst the three of us, where there is going to be some huge life-changing money on the line with this draft. So I'll explain that in a little bit. And of course, last thing we'll do is we'll be closing with our mental health minute. But let's get right into it, fellas. I'm going to pass it to you, Mike. Tell us about some bullpens that fantasy gamers should be paying attention to and where there might be some changes that we can anticipate.
Boy, how much time do you got? That's there's a lot of speculation right now, as everybody kind of knows, as to who's doing what. And I've kind of honed in on a few teams that I think are definitely going to be going after some bullpen help, whether that be closers or other high leverage type of guys. And there are definitely some teams that I think that are going to be sellers for sure. Teams that I think are definitely going to be looking for help at the back ends of their bullpen are going to be the Tigers, the Cubs, the Phillies, and the Dodgers. The Dodgers might come as a surprise to some of our listeners because the Dodgers seem to have everything figured out in the wintertime. However, reality sets in, and when you have injuries the way that they've had injuries, and a little bit of ineffectiveness, to tell you the truth, Tanner Scott has not been the most efficient of closers, even though his strikeout rate remains pretty high at 28%, and he's got 19 saves. He's got an ERA over 4. Kirby Yates, who is probably their next best option, has an ERA of almost 4, even though he's got a 35% K rate. So I really think the Dodgers are going to be looking to add some people there. They're getting by with guys like Kasperius and Dreyer and Trevino and Will Klein. I definitely think that they're going to be looking to spend some money to fortify the back end, especially with the idea that Evan Phillips is out for the year. God only knows what you're going to get out of Michael Kopech. He seems to touch a baseball and get hurt. Blake Treinen is supposed to be back within the week, but don't really know what you're going to get out of a guy that's that age either with that kind of mileage on his arm. So there's definitely some rumor there and some thoughts there that they're going to go after some people. There was a rumor going around today that the Dodgers were talking to Cleveland about Stephen Kwan and Emmanuel Clase. Kind of shifting gears to that, Clase would probably be the top arm on the market if the Guardians decide that he is available. Some names that you could see get moved here, I think, in the near future, Clase would be at the top of that list. There's a lot of rumor about Mason Miller being available out of Oakland. I think Felix Bautista's name is getting thrown around, although the current thought around him is that he's not going to be traded, but I think that the guys behind him definitely will be trade pieces. Baltimore has some reason to think about being in on him and keeping him for next year based on the cost of what he is. But if they get blown away, they could move him. Raisel Iglesias, who's been good over the last couple of weeks, unbeknownst to many fantasy players, I think. People have really written Iglesias off, and they should not. He's definitely made a comeback over the last 3 or 4 weeks and has looked more like himself. And Kenley Jansen is also going to be available, we would imagine, in Los Angeles. Now, you might ask yourself, self, who's going to replace those guys if those guys do get moved? Well, in Cleveland, if they move Class A, there would be seemingly good reason to move Hunter Gaddis and Cade Smith as well. If they moved Class A, Cade Smith would probably be the heir apparent there if they don't move him too. That could really be an interesting situation to kind of see how that plays out. If Mason Miller were moved and for the Athletics, the guy that I talked about last week on here and also have been really high on is Jack Perkins. He's a 25-year-old right-hander out of Indiana. definitely could be a guy that steps into a closer role, at least for this year, even if he were to become a starter later on. Again, should Bautista get moved in Baltimore, it's a little bit more tricky because I think Sir Anthony Dominguez and Gregory Soto could be on the move. You could see a scenario where a guy like Andrew Kittredge steps in and does that role there. They really don't have a ready-made closer. It's one of the reasons why I also think that they would hang on to Bautista. And if Atlanta were to move on from Raisel Iglesias, which I think that they will do, they have very little hope of really getting back into the playoff picture and some serious injuries. Iglesias did have two saves last weekend, and ERA is down to 4.42 after being over 6 for months. He's got the K rate back up over 27%. He's been looking good. They have a couple of options there that they could look at, one of which could be Dylan Lee, who's not really excelled in the role when he's done it. Another guy there that I'm pretty interested in, should Iglesias get traded, would be Eniel De Los Santos, who's a guy that is in middle relief for them right now, but definitely would be someone I would be interested in taking a flyer on should the trade of Iglesias happen. And Kenley Jansen in Los Angeles, if he were to move, a lot of people would say, oh, you know, they've got guys like Ben Joyce. Well, Ben Joyce is hurt and not sure when he's going to come back. Robert Stevenson's also hurt and not sure when he's coming back. Reed Detmers has been a bit of a revelation, but his ERA is back up over 4 again now too. But I would think there that Detmers would be the choice if he doesn't also get traded. So the issue that you guys have, you know, that we have with all this stuff is that I think the market for relievers is going to be robust. There's a lot of guys that are at the back ends of bullpens that are not necessarily closers that might have higher value than the closer themselves, you know. So you've got guys like Dominguez and Soto, like we talked about. Even the White Sox have guys like Steven Wilson and Cam Boozer who definitely would be on the move if they're healthy and able to go there. So it's going to be a really interesting time period, I think. I know I've just rambled for about 5 minutes talking about bullpens. We don't really have a clear picture yet of what's going to happen with 2 weeks left to go until the trade deadline. The other question that I have is these teams that are kind of on the periphery, what do they do? If you're a general manager and you're a general manager, say, of the Cincinnati Reds, and you're 3 games above .500 and you've been playing decent baseball, do you think that you're 1 or 2 moves away from being able to compete for the Central Division crown or a wild card? Maybe you do. If you do, then you go about your business a little bit differently than you would if you think that you're going to be a seller, because the Reds are a team that have a lot of guys at the back end of the bullpen that people would love to have. Graham Ashcraft, Emilio Pagan, Rogers, you know, Barlow, guys like that, Santillan, that could really help a team at the back ends of their bullpens. I think Kansas City's got to decide what they're doing. Are they in or out? You know, they should be out, but will they be? You know, if they decide that they're out, Estevez and Urseg become really big pieces. Estevez might actually end up being the most movable closer of the group based on his contract status and based on the fact that he's been so successful. Minnesota as well. They're in it right now in second place, but are they really? I mean, Detroit's kind of running away with the division. Do they think that they're in for the wild card? Because they also have Duran and Jax that would be guys that a lot of teams would like to have. So it's going to be a hub of activity. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens, especially in those places where guys leave and somebody else comes in. Oh, another team besides Cincinnati and Cleveland that has to decide what they're doing is Boston. Boston's played really well over the last 2 weeks. They have a great trade chip there on Aroldis Chapman. If they decide,
they're not
that
trading him. There's no way. I think they already said that they're in it. They're going for it.
Well, they should be, but you know things change in 2 weeks, right? I mean, if they lose 5 or 6 games coming out of the break, they could change their mind. They've got the young nucleus, and they've got a guy there that in Chapman that is still just throwing unbelievable gas. He's got a 40% strikeout rate. He would be a hot trade commodity if they decided to move him, and they could probably get something for him to help them moving forward for next year. My only point in saying that, Chris, is like we don't know, but teams make weird decisions all the time about whether they're in or they're out and whether they have a legitimate chance to be able to get past the big boys when it comes to the playoffs.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. I just feel that the fans in Boston, like the way they've this, you know, streak that they've been on over the 10-game win streak, and the way the fan base has kind of rallied around this team, I think there would be a riot in Boston if they were kind of, if they even, you know, hinted at the idea of selling. Now, of course, they could lose 10 games in a row and then the calculus changes. But
I just
feel like they have to make a push for it now. And it makes sense. I think they've got a real shot. I wouldn't even be surprised if they took the AL East. I mean, they're only three games back. And that they team is coming together at the right time here. But anyway, get it. So some good names that you brought up there, some guys that could be moving. I just wanted to bring up two other ones that I think there's a pretty high likelihood of closers on the move. Pittsburgh with David Bednar and Washington with Kyle Finnegan. What do you think is the likelihood those guys move, and who would be some players behind those closers that we could take a look at as potential replacements?
I think it's a definite that both of those guys would be on the move. I mean, I know Bednar is a native Pittsburgh son, and there's a lot of team people there on the team that don't want to move him. But Finnegan, you know, Finnegan always gets saves, but he's not real sexy. You know, the peripherals aren't super great there. I think if Finnegan gets traded, he goes to a team that he does not close. I think he's probably a high leverage guy at the back end of a bullpen. What Washington does in that situation is a matter of really great import. I mean, what do they do? They have, Cole Henry is a guy that they've used that they like, that has been effective at times. They also just brought up a middle reliever that people probably should file for later. His name is Andre Lara. He's got a 31% strikeout rate so far in the major leagues. Now, granted, it's very, very small sample size, but I saw him pitch the other night and I was really impressed with him. Jackson Rutledge is another guy, you know, you might remember, a high-round draft pick that has transitioned to the bullpen and has been a long reliever for them. So it's hard to know exactly what they're going to do. They have Brad Lord and Jose Ferrer as well, who've been decent, who also could be on the move. If Finnegan does get moved, Lord could get first chance, but I like Lara better there, more kind of long-term. And Pittsburgh, I think Pittsburgh's going to trade both Bednar and Santana. I think that they should trade both of those guys anyway. And that's an interesting one to me, because I think they have two guys in the middle there that could really be interesting in a closing situation in the short term. And one is Isaac Mattson, and the other one is Braxton Ashcraft. Now, Braxton Ashcraft was a starter, and they brought him up, and they're doing the bullpen thing to kind of get him ready to be in the major leagues. And there's been a lot of conversation very quietly about, hey, we're going to get him some starts, and kind of like the Garrett Crochet plan from last year, you know, two or three innings and then be done, and kind of transition him into the rotation because they envision him as a rotation piece next year. But having watched both Mattson and Ashcraft pitch, those guys are both really nasty. Ashcraft is nastier. And I think that he would be a guy that could get some opportunities there should they do the move of getting Bednar and Santana out. And can we just shout out David Bednar a minute? I mean, the guy had a horrible year last year. He was fighting through some health issues. He talked about that in the offseason. He was a little bit ineffective to start the year, but as of this moment, he's got 13 saves with a 2.53 ERA and a 34.6% strikeout rate. So shout out to David Bednar. I know he's not listening, but I mean,
never say never.
What a great comeback for him to be back from the edge there and really be playing well.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been great. We talked about him quite a bit in the offseason. It's kind of one of those mid-round closers who we were confident had the job because Pittsburgh really had nobody else, and confident that, you know, he would bounce back after an injury-plagued year. And he's definitely, returned value on where you drafted him. Just wanted to piggyback off of Raisel Iglesias because I went and looked. I have him on one really important team, or actually two teams, and it has been brutal, obviously. So I haven't been paying close attention. I see the skills, quite an uptick. I mean, it's only 10 innings, but over the last 30 days, the skills are off the charts. He's got a 36% K rate with only a 3% walk rate, 1.77 Sierra, backed up by an 18% swinging strike, 38.7% CSW. So obviously a small sample, but. A lot different than what we saw. People were thinking, you know, is this guy done earlier in the year? And he's going to be a nice piece for somebody who acquires him at the deadline. And Atlanta has no reason not to, right? What a weird weird season they've had. I mean, just everything. It's like a Murphy's Law season. Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong for that team. There's just like some bad juju there or something. But yeah, he's definitely someone I could see on the move. I mean, just listening to that. And I recommend, like, anybody who is really searching for closers, pause the podcast and just kind of re-listen to what Mike said, because he just dropped a ton of names, guys that I've never even heard of. Go take some notes, because I think these are guys that could really be impactful down the stretch that just, you know, that get an opportunity. And saves are saves, man. Doesn't matter how it looks. You know, we're all scrambling for them.
And these are guys that probably won't cost you that much right now if you want to be proactive.
Get out ahead of it. And that's why I thought it was important to have this conversation. We've got a couple weeks left, but, you know, before the deadline, but to just have these guys on the radar so you can either stash or, you know, when the trades do happen, you are at least are familiar with some of these players and can make moves accordingly. So, good stuff, Mike. We'll be checking in with you as we get closer to the deadline here. And we are going to transition now to Dave with his injury segment. And yeah, tell us, Dave, we were talking about players to stash, guys that you, and this is specifically like if you have IL spots, obviously it changes, you know, the calculus. Like in tout, I have unlimited IL. So this isn't a relevant conversation for me for that league. but tell us about in leagues like NFBC where you don't have IL spots or even limited, say one or two spots, who are some players that we should be thinking about that are, you know, on the horizon here in terms of a comeback? And, you know, we're going to go, I think you said position by position with this, right?
Sort of. Yeah. I got a few hitters and a few pitchers.
Okay.
But
all right, let's start with the hitters.
Okay. So the first hitter that I have here is Ryan Mountcastle. Now, he was diagnosed with a grade 2 hamstring back in June, and he was given an 8 to 12 week timeline for return. So there was thought that he was going to miss, you know, most of the remainder of the year. But it's looking like he's going to be back a little bit sooner than like on the earlier part of the time frame. He's already begun swinging. He's done some running on the field, and he's expected to begin a rehab on July 22nd. So very soon. Just a reminder, he was supposed to be one of the benefactors of these new dimensions in the new ballpark. And I know he had a slow start, but he hit 298 in May. His home splits right now, they look pretty good. Hasn't been much power, but he's hitting much better at home. So for him, I think you could get 6 or 7 weeks out of him. And if you need a corner infielder, he's someone I would be picking up because I think he'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Where do you think, I mean, do you think the playing time will be consistent for him though, when he comes back?
I do, because I think they might be trading guys. Like I think they might trade away Ryan O'Hearn. Mm-hmm. I think he might be on the way out. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Mountcastle was the happiest one with the new dimensions. So I think they want to get him going, get him acclimated to the stadium and get him ready for next year, because I think they'll be playing for next year. So I do think he'll play. I think he'll play most games in the week. I give him 5 or 6 times a week. And this is a guy that you can get for free, I want to say right now, because a lot of people would have dropped him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Good stuff. Ryan Mountcastle, I'm trying to pull up his rostership percentage here, and he is 7% owned in the main event. So someone that you can easily pick up and stash now. I'm sorry if I missed this, but when do you think, is that going to be within the next 2 weeks here, or do we have a time frame?
Yeah, he's going to start a rehab assignment, they said, on the 22nd, hopefully. So it's been tough this week with updates because teams just kind of take the break off. But assuming that goes well, he'll need maybe a couple of weeks. And I would guess the beginning of August, maybe like some form of single digits in August, should be ready to go.
All right. Good stuff there. Who else do you have in terms of hitters?
Okay, so I asked this question on Twitter today, and I got some good responses too, so I wanted to address those. Luke Kieschel, he's going to start a rehab assignment as of, you know, before we're actually releasing this. So he'll have started it on the Friday. And he was dominant in his short time up, which was pretty incredible. He was only there for about seven games, but he did so much damage with power, with speed. And this is something that he did in the minors too. He's someone with a high batting average and some speed. So he might be a nice middle infield option. My guess, he would be back very beginning of August.
Okay. Yeah, he really was. I remember regretting not looking at him more closely when he was available earlier in the year. He was awesome during those seven games or whatever it was. And it looks like people are stashing him. I'm surprised to see he's up at 49% rostered in the main event and util only right now. Mm-hmm. So we'll see with the Twins. Like, they may be a team that's active at the deadline too and opens up a spot for him to play. They've got a bit of a logjam, but that could change here in the next couple of weeks. All right. On to your next player, Dave.
All right. I got some pitchers now. The first one that I want to stash is Spencer Arrighetti. Just a reminder, he had a fractured right thumb. It was the unluckiest injury I've seen in a while. He just got hit during batting practice while playing in the field, playing catch in the field. It just nailed him. So he's had multiple bullpens. I think he had a live bullpen as well. And there's news of him possibly starting the rehab assignment next week. So, I mean, he's only thrown nine innings this year, so he'll need to get an extended rehab, but you could still get six good weeks out of him. And just a reminder, even last year, he had a 27.1% K rate and a 16.8% K minus walk rate. He had a 42% whiff on the curve, 38% whiff on the sweeper, and he throws those two pitches 30% of the time. I think he's going to be the team's number three, depending on what they do at the deadline. And I definitely think he's worth a stash.
Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Do you trust any information coming out of Houston with injuries? They told us that Yordan Alvarez was day to day, and now they're saying this guy was really hurt. He might be near death.
You know what? He might have a torn ACL that we don't even know about right now. Who knows? Honestly.
That's what I mean. Like, I don't know what I've had Arrighetti on my bench for. Since Glarf, I've had him forever because I feel the same way. Like, if he comes back, he's going to provide me with some really good stuff. But it feels like every week is like a slog of like, he threw a bullpen. I'm like, okay, like, can he just go on rehab already? Like, what's going on? You know, like, it just feels like it's taking a really long time.
Yeah, honestly, I have no idea what's going on in that city. And, you know, for someone that you could probably get for cheap off the wire or maybe even free, I'd be willing to take them at their word right now. And simply because it was a hand injury. It wasn't like a shoulder or an elbow injury or anything like that. I take a chance on him. And then, you know, when we find out he's got, I don't know, some virus or who knows, then you just move on.
It's so strange with Houston, man. Like, they seem like such a sharp organization, right? In so many ways, like, they get players, they make them better, they make smart decisions, but they are bottom of the barrel, it seems like, when it comes to their medical staff and their training, like, you know, the decisions they make and the lack of information and, you know, these injuries turning into much longer term than we thought. Just a very odd thing to see such a big difference there. Like, I would expect if the Angels were doing this, right, and they had a guy, you know, who was supposed to be day to day and then he's out, you know, 3 months, like, oh, it's the Angels or the Rockies. You know, you kind of expect incompetence in all areas from those organizations. But Houston, it's just kind of odd. This one thing is just really, really bad.
Well, it was their last GM or who was it? Sam Click. Is that his name? He wanted to call for an investigation on, you know, their return to play practices, and then he got fired a couple weeks later. So there's something going on there that I don't know about, and, you know, that's very, very fishy, but yeah. That might also be conspiracy Dave coming out here.
Yeah, we've already had enough Davey Downer. We don't need to bring conspiracy Dave into onto the show here. All right, give us another picture, Dave.
All right, I'll go briefly. I've got a few more here, but players that should be stashed, I think, in leagues with IL. Someone brought up Michael King, and I think I agree with that. Mm-hmm. He said himself that he believed he'd pitch again in 2025, But the tough part is that it's with nerves, and it's such a unique situation that there could be setbacks. Like, it doesn't really matter what the book says should happen. It all depends on what happens with you. And it's an individual diagnosis. But the upside there is just too high to pass. So I think he should be stashed. But if we find there's any setbacks, then I'm cutting bait right away.
Didn't it start with Michael King that they scratched him from a start because they said he slept wrong on his shoulder?
Yeah, something with the pillow or whatever it was. It was just a bad night's rest. And now, 2 months later, it's
so wild.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, Michael King, just for reference, he is 100% owned in the main event. So, yeah, people are banking on that upside. And to me, that makes sense.
Another one that someone brought up, Shane Bieber. And I'm a hesitant yes, just because coming back from Tommy John's always a concern for the control and command. He's looked good so far, but it's been against low level competition. So I'd still take a chance on him just because we've seen him do it before. Someone brought up, Bailey Ober. I actually would stash him, only because I think his problems this year have been with the hip. So assuming the hip is healed or it's 100% or close to it, I think we might actually see a good version of him for half a season. And he's starting a rehab assignment very soon.
Is his hip tied to his bad whip? See what I did there?
Wow. That's really clever,
I'm a,
man.
I'm a poet and I didn't even know it. No, the answer is no on Bailey Ober, guys. Come on now.
Okay. What is your problem? Do you have him? Did you get burned by him this year or just in past years?
No, I know that the conventional wisdom is when I say no to somebody, it's that I was personally hurt or scared off by something that they did. I just have never gotten the big deal. People really like him and I'm like, oh, he's okay. Like if I got him, cool, but I'm not going to go out of my way to get him. And it's always how I've kind of felt about him.
Yeah. Yeah, so, no, I get that. I mean, I think I felt that way more so this year, you know, especially in the spring, like the velo was down and just like the vibes around him were bad. But I think to Dave's point, if you're in a 12-team league and he's out there, I think it's worth at least picking him up. I think at the rehab start, he was going to start that today or this week.
Yeah.
So I think it's worth at least seeing where this goes and seeing if it really was, he was pitching injured and, you know, we'll get more of the, not that Ober is going to be a league winner, but at least he was like a guy who you could depend on for a nice whip, you know, and the ERA is never going to be great, but at least serviceable, right? I think 12 team viable for sure. So
that's totally fair.
Yeah.
Chris, so I guess that means we know he's available in our draft later that Mike won't take him.
I will not.
I was worried about that. I was getting worried that with Mike's first pick, he was going to take Bailey Ober. I was going to jump Ober just to make sure I got him.
I was actually really hoping that Brett Gardner would be available.
He's in the pool. He's definitely in the pool. So we'll see where that goes. All right. We got Ober. Let me follow up on, did you have anybody else, Dave? Or
I did, but it. Okay, go ahead. I'll just do it quickly. Shane McClanahan, yes, stash him. Schwellenbach, do not stash him. Same with Grayson Rodriguez and Bryce Miller.
Reagans, where are we at? You stashing him?
Yeah, if you've already stashed him this far, he should start throwing. He should have already started throwing, I believe. So once the Royals come back, we might get some updates on him. So if you stashed him already, keep stashing him and then see where the updates take you.
And one player that I'll note that I came across this the other day was Zebby Matthews. He pitched really well on his rehab. I kind of forgot about him. You remember, I was all in on him in the offseason and even when he came up initially. And then he got hurt and I'm like, you know, that's probably all we're not going to get much out of him this year. But he's on a rehab assignment, threw four scoreless innings in AAA this past Sunday, struck out 9 with no walks in just 4 innings. So he's someone I think you keep an eye on here. The velocity looked really good, touched 99 in that rehab start. So here I go again. Here I go again with the Zebby Matthews thing.
No, I got him too. I like him. I like him.
I think he's worth a pickup. You know, especially there's talk about Joe Ryan being moved, which would make sense. It seems like you also brought up Duran and Jax. It seems like the Twins, I know they were like, they're kind of in the middle of ownership now. They're selling the team, and it seems kind of just like a mess, and they don't want to take on any payroll. If anything, they want to shed payroll. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them be super active at the deadline and see like a Joe Ryan and, you know, Duran be moved. As crazy as that sounds, right? Because these are really good players. I don't get the sense that right now they're in a place where they're that interested in competing, honestly. Which is sad, but unfortunately the case for a lot of organizations right now. All right, we're going to leave it there for that segment. We're going to take a quick break, but after that, we will be back with our second half draft. All right, we are back. So just to have a little fun this week, we're going to do a second half draft, just the three of us. And we want to put a little, you know, little stake on it, right? So we get paid for this podcast. It's not a lot. But what we decided to do was we're going to draft five players, and we're going to use a CBS points scoring system. Out of the five players that we select, the players who have accumulate the most points at the end of this half will get... Usually we split the what we get paid for this podcast. Whoever wins for the month of September, that person will get all of the money. So it might be enough. I'm thinking like maybe it'd be enough for me to buy like a week's worth of groceries. So that would be cool. that helps. So we'll have a little fun with it. But again, we're picking five players. What we're going to do is each select two infielders, two outfielders, and one pitcher. And again, we're going to use the standard scoring system for CBS. So for those of you not familiar with it, you get a point for a single, two for a double, three for a triple, four for a home run. You lose a point for a strikeout. Pitchers, I think you get is it 8 points for a win and 10 for, well, we're not going to, nobody's picking closers. But you get like a point for a strikeout. So we'll figure that all out. We'll just calculate it at the end. But again, we'll have a little bit of fun with this. So we didn't even decide draft order. But since I'm nice, I'm going to give... I'm not going to make the first pick. You know what? Let's give it to Dave. Dave, I want you to have the 101. Go ahead. Give us your pick. Because I'm just interested to see, actually, you with your Ohtani thing and, you know, hemming and hawing about, oh, he's pitching now, or, oh, the injury, blah, 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 blah.
Right, but he's neither an infielder nor an outfielder, though.
That's a good point. Let's make him an infielder for this exercise. Who cares?
Hold on. Do I get credit for his pitching if I take him?
No.
You're not going to get doing it in the same game.
It's two different players.
Yeah, no, I never believed in the whole, because then that would just, it makes the game unfair. And this applies to leagues where that is the case. I know there are plenty of leagues out there where, you know, Ohtani, you get both of his stats. That's BS. Get the hell out of here.
No, it is. Yeah. Well, you know, the kindergarten teacher teaching about fairness. It's not fair, Dave.
Asking a question. That's like, hey.
You were working an angle.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad you brought it up because I didn't even really think about it. But yeah, that's you don't get his pitching stats, just his hitting stats. If you want to take him as a pitcher, probably not a good move. But, you know, they're two different players. Ohtani pitcher, Ohtani hitter. All right. Tell me, with the 101 of the second half draft for the Fantasy Baseball Beat podcast, Dave Funnel, who do you select?
I select Aaron Judge from the New York Yankees.
Aaron Judge. All right. Good pick.
I'll write these down for everyone, okay?
All right. Good stuff. So Judge with the 101. Mike, pass it to you.
I mean, I feel like if we're going to call Ohtani an infielder, that I got to take Ohtani here.
All right. So you're not worried about him. Now, Dave, I know you brought this up last week. Ohtani, ever since he started pitching, actually hasn't been that good as a hitter.
Yeah.
Are you concerned? Yeah. And it sounds like you are, but how concerned are you with that?
Well, I know his batting average dropped, and I know his steals attempts haven't been where they were. And I know in the offseason, Robert said that they were going to be mindful of that and try and protect him that way. So I don't know if he's going to run a lot, but like we always say, he is Ohtani. If anyone can outdo it, it's him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everything but steals, I think we can count on at some point the rest of the way.
Okay. So maybe he slows down the base paths. Just looking up his rest of season projection and kind of where he slots in if you're using an auction calculator. So right now, and this is using a composite of all the major systems, he would come out as the third overall player. And they're projecting him for 18 home runs, 11 stolen bases, and a .284 average. All right. I am going to go with the third pick. Oh, boy.
And you get two in a row here, right? Snake?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. No, that's fair. this is tough, man. Should I go pitcher? Maybe I should. Should I go? I'm going to go Tarik Skubal. We're going to go with the best pitcher on the planet right now.
There you go.
All right. So for my second pick, we're going with Vladdy. Oof. And remember, this is points. So anybody who's like, oh, Vladdy, he doesn't steal bait. No, points, different game. He's projected for 13 home runs, a .296 average. And guy doesn't really strike out. So his profile in a points league is much more valuable than in Roto. All right. Back to Mike.
I am going to take Bobby Witt Jr.
Junior. All right. Bobby Witt with the second pick of the second round. Dave, to you.
Okay, so I get two picks here, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. With the my sixth overall pick, I will take for my infield Jose Ramirez.
Okay.
And then with the seventh overall pick, I will go back to the outfield for Ronald Acuna.
Nice.
Now, we should add one thing, too, based off me picking Acuna. We talked about how the only time we can switch players is if that player goes on the IL, correct?
Good point. Yep, we did talk about that offline. So you get one, but you only get one, right? If you have two guys get injured, tough luck, you know, but we'll say you get one pickup if a player gets injured.
Okay. That's fair.
So, okay. So fair. Cause I was going to ask you with Acuna, given the way I know you are with injuries, if you were at all concerned about his health, but sounds like, and that's why you brought this up then, at least you give yourself that insurance. If something happens with him, you can back yourself up.
Yeah.
All right. Mike, to you.
Oh boy. This is an interesting time period to be alive.
It really is.
I'm going to go with, ooh, boy, that's a hard one to pass up. I'm going to go with Paul Skeens.
Ooh, okay. Okay. Didn't think you were going there. Tell me about the Skeens pick.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a hedge, right? I mean, I'm hoping that they don't shut him down at some point. You know, I haven't heard anything about them having innings limit on him, but with very little to play for, you know, you got to wonder. He's at 121 innings pitched already this year, but he's been so strong, he doesn't really show any signs of letting up, and he's 23, you know, with a seven pitch mix, you know. So hopefully they'll keep going with him. I mean, there's really not much to think about there. If he pitches the rest of the year, you know, he's probably 1B to Skubal, right? So
I will say, I don't know if you saw this, but it was a notification I got today. Just pulling it up here. Paul Skeens could have more shortened outings. So that is something to think about. Quote unquote, low volume outings as a means to manage his workload. That's via Noah Hiles of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
I didn't see that today. That would have been good to know before drafting.
You were not prepared. You did not prepare, and this is what happens.
The problem is that some of us have to work.
Come on, that's overrated. Work is for suckers. The working man is a sucker.
Kindergarten. Oh, nice, good one. I like that.
Yeah,
that's a great quote. I love that.
Oh, the best. One of my favorite movies. Anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, A Bronx Tale. If you haven't seen it, go watch it.
It's terrific.
All right, back to me for my third pick. I'm going to go back-to-back outfielders. We're going Juan Soto. That's the guy who I was concerned you were going to take, Mike. So a little sigh of relief when you went Skeens there.
Great points pick.
And, another guy in, points as opposed to Roto. Like in Roto, I never really take Soto just because, he takes so many walks, and that's not really that's not helping you at all. In Roto, maybe with runs, but but not really having the same impact. But in points league, he's gold. So we're gonna go Soto, and I'm kind of conflicted between these two. But I think I was looking at this one player today, and it looks like he's due for some positive regression. I'm gonna go Fernando Tatis.
Nice, good choice.
All right, so I've got my two outfielders. I've got a pitcher. And one infielder. So I got one infielder left. Davey Downer.
Nope. Mike first.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Mike. Go ahead.
Now you're giving away my picks. Okay. I'm going to go. This is going to be a little bit of a crapshoot, but I'm going to kind of stay true to what I've done this year. I'm going to go with PCA.
Ooh.
Okay. Let me say. We talked about this last week where I spoke out against PCA during the draft season and you liked him. Obviously, that worked out really well for you, Mike. In a points league, though, and I want to make this point more for the listeners.
Right.
And anybody listening probably recognizes this, but PCA in a points league, probably not the best because of the lack of walks that he has in the chase. We'll see. We'll see how it works out. Maybe I'll be wrong two times in a row, but there's that can hurt you. But all right, Dave, back to you.
Okay. I know where I want one of my picks. All right, so I'll make that pick first. I will take Zach Wheeler as my pitcher. Very happy to get that.
You seem like a Wheeler guy. Like if there's any Davey Downer pick, it's Wheeler. just this kind of steady, no risk. Like that's right up your alley.
He is he's as steady as they come. Yeah. I really want to take someone who I think is just gonna mash this second half, but he strikes out a lot. Actually, I can say it. You guys all have your infielders. Oh, no, you don't. No, Chris, you don't. Never mind. All right. I will take to hell with it. Do we get points for walks? We get points for walks, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'll take Ellie De La Cruz.
Ooh, okay.
He strikes out a lot, which is going to hurt.
Uh-huh.
But, he walks enough and... if he finishes the second half, he's going to hit for 30, I think. He's going to finish with 30. So, I'm pretty happy with my team right now.
Okay. Give us a quick recap of who you have.
Yeah. So my two outfielders are Aaron Judge and Ronald Acuna. My two infielders are Jose Ramirez and Ellie De La Cruz. And my pitcher is Zach Wheeler.
Nice. Good stuff. All right, Mike, your last pick.
I need one more outfielder, and I think I'm going to take James Wood.
Okay. Oh,
great pick.
James Wood. So you believe.
I went purposely thinking about this. I want young upside. I know it's points, and I know what you said about PCA is well stated and a really big thing, but I really wanted – I got Ohtani, Witt Jr., PCA, Wood, and Skeens. So I'm going young, baby, and hoping for the best.
All right, good stuff. That's good. Yeah, makes sense. I mean, you want guys that are going to have the juice at the end of the year here and maybe take a step forward. I mean, not that, you know, James Wood, I don't know if there's many steps left to take. The guy's been unreal this year. So I need an infielder. I'm not loving my options here, to be honest with you. Maybe I should have taken someone, taken an infielder earlier, because not too much that stands out. I'm going to go with someone who's been a disappointment this year, but I think is finally healthy and ready for a good second half, and that's Gunnar Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
So he's projected for 12-7 with 267 average. He grades out as the 24th overall player based on his rest of season projection, specifically in points. So, yeah, I debated.
Good choice.
I debated him or Mookie. What are your thoughts? Like, I'll pass it to you, Mike. Who would you take there? Because you wanted to go younger, so obviously that's where I went. Mookie is steady, but is like he on the decline? Like, is this what we're? Do you think like Mookie bounces back this year?
No, I don't know if I would say he's on the decline or not. I mean, it's hard to say. He is 32. You wouldn't think that he would be declining. He's still squaring up the baseball. He's not striking out. I think a lot of this has to do with that illness that he had in the preseason, you know, not being able to go to Japan. The rumors were that he had lost 18 pounds, which is striking. I mean, he's a slight guy, you know, he's only about 5'9 or 5'10. Maybe 170 pounds at his max. So if he lost 18, 20 pounds, he was playing at 150 pounds in the major leagues. You know, that's not so great, you know? And so his counting stats are actually way down. And he actually in 24 actually had kind of a down year too, in terms of the counting stats. I also think that they're not doing him any favors playing him at shortstop. I mean, the guy is a gamer, he'll play wherever you want him to, but they really should upgrade there. And let him go back to either playing second or go back to the outfield where he belongs.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree. That's, you know, definitely that's got to take a toll, you know, and I really think that's a good point about just not starting the season on the right foot, you know, and having that illness. I remember I was just like totally off of him at that point. I had a draft coming up. I had a few drafts actually in one, which he slipped to like the third round. I'm like, I really just don't, something about this just doesn't feel right. He's already, like you said, a slight guy, and to lose that much weight and just start the season off like that, it just seems like he hasn't been able to get his legs under him. Maybe having the break here will give him time to reset, and hopefully we see a nice second half from him. We're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to be closing with our Mental Health Minute. We're going to be right back. All right. Finishing out here, as usual, with our Mental Health Minute, where we step away from fantasy baseball talk and talk about mental health-related topics. For this week, Mike had come up with the topic, so I'm just going to hand it over to you, Mike, and you could lead this discussion here.
Yeah, so thanks, Chris. You know, friends that are listening, we talk every show at the end of the show about mental health, and specifically mental health in men. And something came up in my work this week that I wanted to share with the listeners and with you guys. And I had reached out to you guys to share this information as well. But a term that I absolutely despise that has come up, comes up all the time is, hey, you know, you tell a guy, you tell a young boy, you say, hey, you got to man up. Hey, it's time to man up, you know, wipe away those tears. It's time to man up, get tough, dig deep, however you want to put that. I had that conversation with a parent this week of one of my students who we were trying to get evaluated a safety assessment at the hospital because he was making suicidal comments and comments about self-harm. And Chris, as you know, that's a huge warning sign and things that we have to act upon in schools and in therapy. When people are making threats, you take all threats seriously. You don't just sweep it under the carpet. And the dad came in to pick him up, and I was talking to the dad about, you know, we would really like to have him get assessed for safety at the hospital. I gave him all the information, printed up his face sheet, did all the things that we do for that. And dad said, I just don't understand why he can't man up. Just toughen up. You know, nobody was depressed in the 70s and 80s. No. Well, yeah, they were. And as somebody who has dealt with depression for much of my adult life, I can tell you that people go through crests and troughs with that stuff. There's ups and downs with it. There are days and there are weeks that are better than others. I've noticed this week, even with that incident notwithstanding, that I've been more irritated than usual. And I think a lot of that has to do with work stress, just being coming up to the end of the semester term for summer and all the loose ends that need to get tied up. And then everybody kind of splits for 3 weeks before we come back in August for the start of the fall term. And it just really irritated me. And I wanted to comment on that and get your guys' input on that too, because not only is that a term that I hate, but I don't understand how that it would even be considered advice. If I feel like crap, and I reach out to somebody and say, boy, I really don't feel well. I'm not doing great. And you say to me, hey, Mike, you know what? Just man up, you know, put your big boy pants on. Get back out there. That's fine if you got hit by a pitch and you got a bruise on your instep or something like that, right? It's not fine when it comes to life, guys. It's not good advice to give somebody and say, hey, you know what? Yeah, I've been there too. You know, all I did was just man up. You know, I dug deep and I got through it. I really would like to get off of that type of culture. And in those situations, obviously, I think it's really important that people listen. If somebody feels brave enough to bring that up, I applaud that. And it's something that I celebrate in my school. When a kid tells me, hey, Mr. Carter, you know, I feel like crap. I don't feel right. I feel like I need to go talk to somebody. That's what we want. We don't want kids going to man up. Because you know what guys who man up do? They turn into alcoholics. They turn into pill poppers down the road. They turn into abusive turds to their wives and their kids down the road. That's what happens when we push that down in that way. So I was curious as to what you guys think about that. I know, you know, we've talked about that offline and, you know, we don't even joke about that idea of manning up. And when I brought that up to you guys for the mental health minute, you were like, yeah, let's go with that. So what's your experience with that?
I hate the term for a couple of reasons. One, I hate that it implies that, you know, being brave or taking a responsibility or doing something very hard is, first of all, just associated with men, because you're demeaning women right there by saying the only way you're doing it is if you man up. No, women are just as strong, just as brave, and show just as much courage each and every day. So to single out one and stereotype the other, it's very insulting. But secondly, in order to man up and to, quote, be a man, you need to do all of these things that are, you know, if you don't show courage, you're not a man. If you don't do something that's difficult, you're not a man. No, you're allowed to, A, you know, find something difficult, ask for help, get help, do something alongside someone else. Doing difficult things alone is never the answer. It shouldn't be the answer. If you feel like you have to do things alone, those are problems right there that I think need to be addressed. And I don't think it's a problem at all for any man at any time or any woman or any person to ask for help, to, you know, ask for help, ask for assistance, take a break from something, not do it if it's not going to hurt you. Just not do it if you're not comfortable with it or it's going to hurt you. So I hate the term man up. I don't mind next man up, you know, like they do in baseball. It's like, oh, he's hurt. Okay, you're up. That's completely different.
But man up,
no.
Yeah, you know, I'm not surprised. You know, you told the, you know, gave the scenario about what happened at school this past week. And, you know, just hearing that story, I'm not surprised that child is in such a, having such difficulties given the home environment that he's in. Right. Like, and it's interesting that the father, like, there's no connection there, obviously. Right. Like, between how the way he's treating his son, you know, and the lack of, I'm sure that it sounds like a pretty, at least from him, pretty invalidating environment, right? And how that can lead to problems like you described. So that just perpetuates those types of mental health issues. And just to kind of highlight what you said about how this idea that it kind of gets like romanticized, like the strong man, you know, in like the olden days, like the 50s and, you know, even going back to whatever, the 70s and, you know, how men were tough back then. I just think it's like you said, a lot of it was covered up by people, you know, dealing with their emotions in really unhealthy ways, right? Alcohol, drugs, domestic violence, you know, addiction, other addictions. So, but yeah, this idea that that was the way that men should be. No, it wasn't. No, you know, that was not, that caused a lot of damage to a lot of people.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, let's get this idea out of our head that that's like, you know, the way things should be. No, it's
not. Yeah. No, I could, I even when I was coming up in my career, when I was first starting in special ed teaching, there was that stigma and that mantra that came from older teachers that I was observing and coming after, which was, hey, you know, you grin and you bear it and you bury it and you take care of it. And you don't talk to anybody about it, because what goes on here, it's like a locker room. Just keep it here. We don't talk about it. We don't talk about it ever. And the first few times that I experienced student suicide or students hurting themselves and things of that nature in my work, it tore me apart, because I didn't feel like I could go anywhere with that. Like, you know, we had this code and you were supposed to honor this code. And after a while I was like, you know, stronger language than what I'm going to use, but forget the code. You know, I got to talk to somebody about this stuff, because it's really having a bearing on me as a person. And I didn't want to be the type of person that on the weekend was like, yeah, you know what? I deserve to drink this 12 pack of Budweiser because I had a hard week. That's really never the right call. And for a long time, I thought that was, when I was in my 20s and 30s. I'm like, yeah, you know what? That'll take the edge off. And then what happens? You drink a 12-pack of Bud on a Saturday night, and then you're moody the next day, and you're vacant, and you're not able to participate in life around you, and you just keep perpetuating the myth over and over again until you decide to kind of stop that and reach out to other people that can help you, which is one of the reasons why I'm so grateful for you guys, because we can go, like, I follow the text thread and I might not be able to respond for 8 or 10 or 12 hours, but then I can get in that. And that provides me a comfort and a level of knowing that there's two people in the world. And I've got other friends too, obviously, here, but that I can rely on you guys to be able to kind of be there when I say, hey guys, you know, I just had a really crappy day. Sorry. And then we kind of lighten the mood up and we make fun of Dave or whatever. Like, it's just, it's always a good thing, you know? And so I appreciate you guys for that, because that helped being friends with you guys and having the group chat and then doing this always makes my mood feel lighter. As we were talking this morning about the show, the first thing I said to you guys was, I can't wait to see you later. I can't wait to do this, because it is a total release from the daily grind that we're all feeling. And it's something that I really enjoy doing with two of my really good friends. So I thank you guys for that.
Right back at you, man.
Yep.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks for bringing that topic to the show today. All right, we're going to leave it there. Real quick, guys, swing off. There's been talk about it replacing extra innings. In favor, not in favor?
No. You can't decide an important game that way. No.
I loved it for the All-Star game.
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was really cool. It would have been cooler if the guys had not left after the second inning when they got pulled out of the game. Can you imagine the Titans if it was like Judge and Otani and those guys? I mean, that would have been great TV. So MLB blew that a little bit, I thought. You know, like that would have been really cool to see. However, I'm one of the few people that I know, unrelated, that's not opposed to the ghost runner in the 10th inning. Because you have to figure out a way. Yeah. You have to figure out a way to get the game over so that it doesn't go to 15 innings, right? Yeah. And it's there's some inherent unfairness, I think, with that. I mean, I think it really favors the visiting team more than the home team in a lot of ways, because they go out there and they score one or two runs and the other team's like, well, I guess we're going to lose this one. But I'm not opposed to the ghost runner either. I thought the home run thing was awesome. I mean, it brought Jack out of the catacombs of his video games to come out and see, like, what is going on? How are they fixing this? And the thing that's crazy about it was I didn't know they were doing it until they did it. I had it on mute. I was like, what are these guys doing?
I had no idea. I had no idea. Watch the game, to be honest. I heard about it the next day. I'm like, what is this? I would have thought that MLB, if they were going to institute this new thing, like hype it up, you know, let people know
exactly
what was going to, you know, could potentially happen. So that was interesting. But then I saw things like, oh, well, is it possible that it could replace extra innings? I'm like, what? Like, what are people talking about? So yeah, I'm with you, Dave. No way, not an important game.
I mean, imagine being a White Sox fan and having to watch your team lose every extra inning game because you don't have three guys to get hit home runs.
Yeah, that's
can you imagine? Tough. I mean, and
who are you going to put up there? Too, Chase Meadroth or Meadroth?
Oh, here we go. No, I mean they'll figure out something. But yeah, like it's this, to that point. Like then, who's throwing the pitches? Right? Is it the other team's batting practice pitcher? Is it yours? Like, I mean, it's inherently it would be unfair, but I have no problem with the ghost runner rule, and I loved how they ended the All-Star game. And I got a lot of messages from old school people like my dad who were like, what are they doing to the game that I love? Right, you know, right, like, yeah. Well, they're trying to get young people to watch it, Dad. You know,
I wouldn't rule it out though. NHL does, what do? The penalty shootout in a regular season game. So,
what did you guys think about the ASB?
I love it, man. Yeah. They have to institute that. I think that's one of the best rules, rule changes that they can make. I don't believe in the robo umps. I think,
no,
you know, there is something still to having an umpire and the human element of it, but to have that, and it adds strategy to the game too. Like if you limit it to whatever it is, two per game or whatever, then you really got to think about it, right? Do I use this challenge now? And so it adds another layer. I think it's a little bit more accountability, you know, and it could kind of reverse some of these horrendous, you know, when the Angel Hernandez, I know he's no longer there, but you know, when you have those kind of umpires, you really need them. So I like
that. And you know, Chris, I didn't feel when we were in Arizona, we went to a number of games together. Did you feel that it took away from the integrity of the game at all? I did not.
No. And it's quick too. What I like, you know, it's not like I get a little annoyed with like replay, like in even in baseball and in other sports as well. It's just like, just takes forever, you know, like they're looking and they go to commercial and then they come back and they still don't have an answer. And then sometimes they still get it wrong. You know, that's annoying. And I feel at times just really messes with the game. But this I see is like very instantaneous. They see it, you show it on the screen, the fans all cheer if, you know, they overturn it. So it's I think it's a really good addition to the game.
Agreed. So, I like it, too.
Yeah. All right. I know you got to go to your son's concert, so I'll get you out of here. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Fantasy Baseball Beat. For Dave Funnel, for Mike Carter, I am Torres. Thank you so much for listening to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.